introducerer vi til en samtale på tværs af Danmark og Asien.
Min baggrund er, at dels at jeg hedder Terkel Atsushi, og jeg er musiker. Og så er jeg født og boede i Japan, da jeg var barn. Hvad med dig, Alex?
Jeg hedder Alexander. Jeg er også musiker. Og ja, så har jeg rejst meget i Japan og lært at tale sproget. Sådan.
Og så er du fra Fyn, kan jeg høre.
Ja, så også fra Fyn.
Men nu, vi vil bare lige, nu har vi kørt det her program noget tid, og så vil jeg bare lige tilføje, at vi sådan konstant tænker over vores format, og de blinde vinkler, problematikker, der måtte være og opstå, og det tænker vi jo sådan set over konstant. Og så vil vi egentlig bare lige sådan sige, at vi er vildt interesseret i, hvad I går og tænker. Så hvis I har noget respons, tanker eller noget derimellem, så må I endelig skrive til os på en mailadresse, som vi sørger for at få oprettet og skrevet ind i beskrivelsen på det her, på den her udsendelse.
Ja, og hvis det, det passer jer bedre at lave en lydfil, så må jeg også gerne sende den i mailen. Ellers så skriv lidt. Vi er meget spændte på at høre noget.
Ja. I den her episode, der har vi inviteret Christoph Biglet i studiet. Vi skal snakke Pinoys Festival og Carlos Celtran og alt muligt andet også. Det bliver lige på engelsk den her omgang. Here we go.
Welcome, Christoph Biglet.
Thank you.
Welcome to this new place we started recording in. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Mm? Yeah, welcome to Denmark.
Thank you. Very excited.
So this is actually the first time we record in this studio.
Mm.
Last time was in the rehearsal space of my band.
Mm.
And it's great to be here.
Yeah.
It's very cozy.
We're upgrading at the Denmark.
Yes.
But yeah, Pinoys Festival. What is that?
Right. Pinoys Festival. So there's plenty of way, I guess, to start, you know, the story of Pinoys. And also because, so to start with, I guess, Pinoys is a festival. It started out as a more collective kind of festival to celebrate Filipino culture for people who have been in Denmark, but also from abroad. So second, third generation Filipinos that wanted to both know more about the culture, but also exploring what is the Filipino culture today. There's plenty of other people also that, you know, that are part of Pinoys, and I'm here today to, you know, talk on behalf of everyone. But we're all coming from very different backgrounds. So there's a core of Danish Filipino people who have kind of started really like the whole movement. I'm coming from personally from a kind of a sideways, but joined eventually. So I started a Filipino film festival here in Denmark in 2013, was it? Because I think there was
a part of Pinoys Festival as well, or
exactly. And, yeah, okay. And eventually we joined forces. They were more into performative arts, dancing, music, and then, but they weren't really like a film proponent to it. So we were like, okay, that would make sense, you know, instead of doing different things, trying to do things together. And we bonded very fast. We're still, you know, very close today. So I think it was both a way for us to celebrate the culture, finding out what defines the culture today, but also finding out our crowd, you know, in Denmark, but also like abroad. At some point, we really started looking into Scandinavia. We also went to the Philippines. We can dig into that.
Yeah.
But I think it was really about a group of people, undefined, numerous, trying to find out where they're coming from.
And
why, you know, we are the way we are. To some extent.
It's fun that you call it. It seems like every, you know, community that does close to anything start by calling themselves a collective. which is I think is pretty beautiful. That you know, that's how everything starts. It's just you gather people who have the same thoughts and background, and you know, try to find more people.
Definitely.
And what you're doing is like coming in the next round.
I think it's that's right, and that's where we also like felt stronger. Also, like by we're not just an event. We're not stopping, kind of because we're not doing any active things right now.
Mm.
But we're still talking, trying to find out what's exciting, following what's happening in the Philippines, how it affects us, and celebrating also, like other Filipinos, half Filipinos, third Filipinos, whatever, and being part of that bigger community of trying to find out what's common with all of us, because there is something. It's just, I think our aim for our collective is trying to find out what it is.
Mm.
We probably won't, but that's all about finding out.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And then you're at the moment also an agent at lo-fi concerts, or what is
So I work at a company called Lo-Fi Concerts. So we're organizing concerts at people's house in living rooms, gardens, cafes, and anything that you can think of. So we are trying to give a scene in everybody's places and homes for any artist to do intimate shows, intimate concerts. So I think I've really started to look into what I wanted to do, in my life and in my professional life as well. I think working with music and culture was always a big part of what I wanted to do. And when the occasion arose in the middle of Corona, ironically, but I didn't really thought about it too much. I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do now.
Yeah.
If I want to make sense of what I'm going to do every day, if the pandemic continues, then I might as well do this.
Yeah. Something you like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you start that work?
So I started actually a year ago in November 2020.
Before the second lockdown.
Before the second lockdown. Yeah. So that was... It was a very uncertain time. I mean, it still is. You know, like we had the press conference yesterday.
Third lockdown.
Let's see.
Talking about Corona pass and masks and all, but to some extent, I think all of us are getting a bit more used to things. Hopefully also less stressed too much about what ifs, and really pushing into being a collective effort. But I think for all of us, even now, we just know that, concert and live music will always be a part of cultural life, cultural offers. And there are so many also people that want to do that. So when things started opening up again, in the spring, there was a big surge for concerts. And we also had our most successful months because, all the venues were still closed and there were a limitation in numbers of people who could attend. Mm. So lo-fi concerts were the right alternative. And it's good to get close to people.
Mm.
Not too close,
With a
with the right amount of closeness, but...
We should do that, Alex.
Yeah.
Do a lo-fi concert.
Lo-fi concert.
You should.
Yeah.
But I think for us, it's also like trying to find, again, our community, we're trying to define ourselves more as a movement, so trying to really like find the people who want to experiment music in a different way. We had like a punk band in a living room, for example. We had some concerts on the rooftops and in big gardens.
Is lo-fi concert a Danish?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually two women co-founders.
Okay.
So we're really proud, really proud to work with them, with Stine and Anna, who started like the whole thing, like I think 3 years ago, 5 years ago. I'm still discovering new things. I've been there for a year, but it's very exciting. We're going. We're in Sweden now, and we're planning to go also like in Norway next year. So really trying to find that movement. And I think for me, it's always been about finding the like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been interested in hearing the stories of people. And what's the very interesting part is, like, you're going to people's home, right? Mm-hmm. You're going into their living room where their stuff are, where their, you know, pictures of their kids are.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the artist comes in and, you know, takes it over, and and the guests are sharing that experience with them.
Yeah.
So that's what I like. That's the story that I like to tell myself. Okay, this is what I do every day.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Well, you're both musicians, so, you know, I guess you're bound to share the same feeling.
I guess, yeah, but I just saw a movie yesterday on Netflix. I don't exactly remember the name of it, but I might edit it in here. But it's about a Japanese guy who works at an office until he's like 46, and he looks back on all the things he regretted. And I don't know if it's cocky to say, but I was somewhat happy that I'm probably not gonna be able to relate to that problem, or, you know, right. Maybe in another sense, but not like
office
in,
life.
In office
your
sense.
Life.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a weird thing to say. But
sometimes you also talked about you kind of fascinated about
office exactly. I have this office dream that, you know, one day I'm gonna make it to the office, you know, I'm gonna wear this, you know, badge around my neck, and, you know,
you're gonna check in, okay,
yeah exactly, mm-hmm.
Welcome Terrico to the office,
yeah
but there are Facebook groups on where people pretend, you know, to be in an office, so there's appointed CEOs, and, you know, like, they pretend to be office lives. I think it's
for people like me,
for anyone.
Okay.
So people who already have a job on the office, I think it's like, you know, like Farmville. Mm. You know, they pretend to have a farm. It's like they're pretending to have a normal life, even though they have it already. But it's adding, you know, in the context of the metaverse and all that. Like today, you know, like
also
creating your own life. But it's so fascinating. People still dream about going to the office.
Yeah.
After going to the office.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where you are.
Yeah, exactly. It is so weird that, you know, spend my whole life trying do something where I don't have to go to the office, then I end up here dreaming of going to the office, you know.
Yeah. Maybe the filter coffee that makes you dream there.
Yeah.
Yeah, must be.
Yeah. What brought you to Denmark? Is it okay to ask like that?
Of course. Yeah. It's actually very random. I kind of believe in, and kind of had to believe in randomness in life.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in France. I was born and grew up in France from Filipino parents, and then I grew up in Paris, right? So like a very big city. Very big metropole with a lot of people, a lot of things, and a lot of pressure, I guess, just by living there. So I studied at university, and then I had the opportunity to leave just my fifth year, you know, to study abroad. I was supposed to go to Canada in the middle, you know, like not
during college.
Yeah. So not Toronto, not Vancouver, right in the middle in Alberta. So I was like,
okay,
I have no idea where this is. Let's go, you know. Mm. And it turned out not to happen for some technicality. So they just told me, hey, do you want to go to Denmark?
Like, okay.
Sure. Where's Denmark? I have no idea. I ended up in Aalborg for 1 year. So I studied there. It was good for 6 months, and then less appealing to some.
When did you arrive? During winter or summer?
No, I arrived during September, so that was also like it was fine. You know, it was good weather. You know, you have Jomfru Annegel to kind of get you through the dark months, but then
distract you.
Yeah, a little bit. But I was a poor student, so I couldn't like really travel. So I haven't seen Copenhagen until then. So my only experience of Denmark was actually just Aalborg. So I went back to France. I was like, never again Denmark, because, you know, I've done that. That's fine. If everything is like Aalborg, then not to, you know, downplay Aalborg, but 10 years ago, it was not the same as today. Today, it's a bit
I get what you
it's
mean.
More exciting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I did actually the office job. I worked in investment kind of banking things. So I had to wear a suit every day, going to work, and it very fast was meaningless. So I tried to find a job somewhere else, and I applied abroad. I wanted to change, and I wanted a big change of scenery. Well, the big change happened to be Copenhagen, and I worked for 2 years at the French embassy, where I worked with the cultural events. So working specifically with arranging concerts and movie screenings here in Grand Theatre.
Yeah, the French embassy is just by the King's New Square.
Yes. Yeah, that was also a very false idea of what Denmark life was, because you come here, it's like, all right, and everything is like
like a movie.
Commons Neutral. Yeah. It's very nice, right? But it was very nice.
You lived there?
No, I didn't live there, but going to work every day there, and your hangout place was Kongenshavn and Nyhavn. That was very safe. So that was my first thing. So I worked there for 2 years. I always had my plan that, okay, I'll stay 2 years and then I'll travel again somewhere else. I wanted to travel. Mm. It's been 10 years and I'm here, still here, which is, it's all my choice. It was, and I really love it now. Yeah. Mm. But it was, it was a different way of thinking about it then. Mm.
But you're married Danish?
Yes.
Okay.
My wife is Danish. So my kid is Danish and French. We're my in-laws are from Køge, where I go, so it's the very Danish, I would say.
Køge is very Danish.
Yeah. Very traditional, kind of way of living, which is, I think, perfect for me, even though sometimes I miss the multicultural offers that, a city like Paris gives you. I was there 2 weeks ago, and it was just different, the amount of people, the amount of different backgrounds that you see and people that you talk to are also very different.
Mm-hmm.
But I can always, travel back there and have it with that.
Yeah, unless there's a pandemic in the way. No, let's see.
Great.
Yeah, sorry. I'm being so pessimistic.
And your parents are from the Philippines?
Yes.
Yes. Have you traveled to Manila or?
Yeah,
because abroad, I bought a thing.
Yeah,
I bought a small globe.
Oh,
when I was in Berlin visiting my father.
Surprise!
Really?
For 9 euro.
Wow!
Then I thought I might as well use it here in the podcast because
for sure. Yeah, it's a hand-sized globe.
Yeah, you can look at the globe.
Uh-huh.
And you can also turn it upside down if you want.
All right.
If you want to look at the globe,
from another perspective. With everything digital, you kind of forget how
it feels. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it also has, this globe has the equator.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you can see where it is
for sure.
Because the globe can be like turned upside down. It can be when you turn it upside down. Yeah,
and now I broke it.
No, it was actually broken when I bought it. So it's kind of
all right.
And when you turn it upside down, you really realize how much of the Earth is actually sea. The Earth is mostly sea.
Exactly. And that's a crazy part because, I lived in Paris, it's landlocked, right? So you don't have access to, except, water in between, but you don't have the sea the same way as here in Copenhagen. Mm. You have to, drive 2-3 hours away to get there. But Philippines is like 7,000 islands, right? Mm. So, even though I've been to my parents, places where they grew up and all that, it's not by the water, but you can easily go get access to the water. And Philippines is so defined by water also, which means also that there's nothing east of the Philippines.
No.
There's just the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the same with Japan, right? So it's like it's also very prone to to natural disasters to some extent.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
It's a thing that, you know, I've been talking a lot with Icelandic friends about. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a thing that Danish people are not used to live with the nature as a factor of anything, but you know, it might be beauty, or it's a bit
nature
cold,
is,
or, you know,
something you look at paintings.
Yeah, exactly. It isn't something that, you know, directly affects your opportunities.
Right.
Like at most, then it's like a rainy day that makes you moody.
Yeah.
Like today.
Yeah. Which is heavy, but you know, I think it does affect people in another way that you know, you have to.
Yeah.
You know, like getting in the way of the established Catholicism mm-hmm. and the church, and yeah. also the new president, Rodrigo Duterte, which he was a very vocal dissident, mm-hmm. and that eventually, you know, drove him to Madrid. Mm, yeah. But
He won the election in 2016.
Yes. So Rodrigo Duterte is kind of named the before its time, like the Asian Donald Trump, right?
Okay.
He's a populist. He was a mayor of the third city in the Philippines called Davao, which was then crippled by drug dealing. It was a platform for drug dealers. It was run by thugs and all that. So the way that he was doing it, he wants to pride himself into a action man, right? Mm. Somebody who's not being intimidated. So what he did is he hired mercenaries to kill yes. drug dealers and make Davao a clean city, which he managed to do. But he also, like, he's a known sexist, machist, promoting, you know, like, over masculinity.
Yeah.
And on those terms, you know, kind of the same way that Donald Trump is getting elected, that Bolsonaro is, you know, is being also like getting a big chunk of population around him, is that they're promoting this image of violence sometimes is good and necessary in, you know, in when the evil is coming to you. Mm. So he got elected in 2016, and the tactic that he used in as being a mayor, he used it on a full scale in the whole country. So there were these extrajudicial killings where he basically authorized people to kill anyone who was suspected of dealing with anything, any type of drugs, either dealing or even suspected of consuming, and without any, you know, anyone being brought to court. Mm. So there were horrific stories of, you know, like people driving by on a scooter, shooting people just on a assumption. Or it was also a good way for, you know, some people to just eliminate opponents or people they don't like to some extent. So that was very tough to read about, of course, because, you know, like from here. But to get back to Carlos, when we went there, so those killings were happening as we, you know, we were there, and Duterte was already elected. So so Carlos Celarayán was also like a very avid dissident of Rodrigo Duterte on social media a lot and also like vocally. He would give interviews, he would help artists that were, you know, against the government, which is a very difficult position to sustain when you live in Manila and when these killings are happening. Those values that are still very ingrained in me.
Mm. You spoke about your example of that, I guess, that a lot of
Filipino people move abroad, or historically have been doing that.
I think maybe it's like of all nations, there are most from Philippines that live abroad, like percentage.
Mm. Yeah. I don't have the number, and I don't want to say anything odd, but I think that something like 30% of the PNB.
Because I also met Filipinos in Japan.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And there's 10,000 Filipinos here in Denmark, right? Yeah. So there's almost like the same amount as French, which is very close, right? It's only 1,000 kilometers.
Yeah.
Problem, but it's more that since a lot of Filipinos and Filipinas there are, you know, there's like not a lot of opportunity to rise up. There's a lot of nepotism. You know, you're the son and daughter of someone, then you'll get a better job and better conditions. So if you're born badly, then you know you won't be able to get out there.
Mm.
So the best opportunity for you, at least, that's what you know, you're being brought to think, is that you need to go abroad. So there's a lot that, you know, that will go to the Emirates, you know, that will go even to Japan, sometimes to the U.S., and here in Denmark to be an au pair. So I think it's not necessarily only au pair, but it's also like in the Philippines not being able to create enough opportunities to
make a nice life.
Exactly, to have a decent life out there.
Mm.
And it's not because there's no talent or no, you know, like a richness out there. It's just that it's the divide is much it's much higher. So here, you know, being an au pair is much better than being a nurse in the Philippines, you know, an educated nurse, for example. You will earn much more, you know, by taking care of somebody else's family and living your own in the Philippines. then you know, working full time or working, you know, back to back jobs in the Philippines. And that's, I guess, the problem. I don't know. That's, I think ultimately people are happy, but I also don't believe that people will say if they weren't happy.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, you'll. But remember being the first, you know, the first time going there in a concert hall, I'm the only non-white guy in there.
Yeah,
I grew up there, right? That was my city. And still now today, I'm still feeling like, okay, this is, I still feel odd. But in the Philippines, everybody looks like me. I still understand everybody who talks, you know, so even though I haven't lived here, lived there for like ever, but I still feel that they spoke, we can relate. You know, we look at each other as like, right, you're my kind.
Yeah.
But I don't know why.
It makes so much sense that, you know, it just matters how you look, you know. And, you know, it's just to stand out in a crowd. That's just, that's another way you are in the room, you know.
No, for sure. But yeah, I don't know. So that's why, like Manila, it's very, very overwhelming, and it's like I feel like it's not me, but it's not too far, right? It's still something that I understand to some level, like how people are and what's the vibe of the place. They're also very wonderful places, you know, like very alternative bars, alternative, you know, like galleries, you know, like that doesn't look anything like galleries that you will see here, you know, very very blank, white, clean. There it's like everything is living, you know, like the location is living and breathing, and you know, it's just very different, but also like very exhilarating. Right? So you're experiencing something completely different that you still understand. And that's the part of Manila that, okay, that sounds great.
Should we talk some more about Carlos Seldrón and his connection to Pinoy's,
Carlos Seldrón, so he came here in 2015. I think we showed a bunch of his art pieces also, because he was a painter. He made some calligraphic work and, you know, political posters and all. And he also made some talks about actually Manila, and especially also like Marcos and Imelda Marcos. So the wife of the dictator. There's a documentary, I think, that was shown in Copenhagen Pix, and that was shown in DR also, called The Kingmaker. So really the story of the Philippines through the eyes of Imelda Marcos. So he was very fascinated about her because, of course, Marcos was the dictator, but she was the one pulling the strings, you know, in the back. So she was a very polarizing character, and he made like a show, a talk, you know, a performance out of it, telling the story of the woman who, you know, did the most and the worst for the Philippines.
Is that the tour called Living La Vida, Imelda Tour?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it would show up, you know, in high heels and, you know, like, because she's known
That was his guided tour?
No, that was another performance that he did.
His talks about Imelda.
Yeah.
And how to live your life.
Like her.
Yeah,
like in a very absurd way. Yeah. You know, he would show up in high heels because she's known to have owned like a...
She's still alive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, she's still living.
And his son is...
His son is...
Getting elected, maybe?
Yeah, he's a candidate for presidency. Wow. And that's the thing with crazy things, you know, like the son of a dictator might be the next president.
And then she can pull the strings again.
Exactly.
Wow. Wow, yes, so frightening.
It is very frightening. So watch The Kingmaker. I don't know where it was, but it was on the air, and it's very explaining how Philippines is also like very cyclically ill. You know, it will forget. Now, okay. as a population, you know, I think this is the whole powering through. You know, it will be good. Okay, so you know, we forget about the bad things, and we give everybody a chance.
Yes,
including you know the one who wronged us in the past. That's very. I think that's very Christian to do.
That is Christian. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so he made that Carlos Sildren made that performance here in Cinematical.
Mm.
We had also like a big like performance, 2-night performance in what used to be Dancer Helena in Carlsberg,
yeah.
So that was he was very ill that night, and he still powered through. He sang the Filipino anthem,
okay.
And then I had to take a cab and drive him to his hotel because was so sick. But then, yeah, I think we connected very, like, us at Pinoy's. So, you know, like, we were 20 years younger than him, most of us. So I think he really chaperoned us into, like, kind of also understanding what is the Filipino root that we're looking for, and one thing I think that really started to define me then that I didn't really understand. So I've always struggled with trying to find out what part of me is Filipino and what should I kind of keep or fight against or whatever that is, right? What defines me as a Filipino, right? So I already was on my journey to find out, you know, like by working with this collective, you know, learning more about the Philippines and all that. But I always felt guilty to try to promote the Philippines when I've never lived there, when I have secondhand culture, kind of. And once, you know, we were in the city with Carlos, and I told him that, like, I feel like an imposter, you know, trying to promote something that I only know partially. And he was like, dude, shut the fuck up. You know, you're as Filipino as I am. All of us are Filipinos. You know, if you feel that connection, then you already are. You don't have to fight against it. You know, you're French, you're Filipino, you might be Danish at some point, and, you know, that's going to be it. It's not for everyone to define who you are. So if you're already on your journey to do that, great, do it.
That's beautiful.
But it didn't really hit me before that. You know, I was always struggling when I was growing up in France. I was trying to be the most French person, pushing back my Filipino roots. And then when I was here, then, you know, like, I think I also realized when I worked at the French embassy, I was promoting French culture. You know, I was part of the, you know, people who were kind of defined French culture here in Denmark. I was like, okay, I don't have to prove anything to anyone anymore about the French part. Oh, what about the part that I pushed my whole life? So that's what, you know, stemmed, I think, my journey to try to find out that part of myself. So I think also, like, finding that voice in Carlos, you know, like, really driving us into
I really get that, but the thing you are afraid of, you know, is probably the voices from the Philippine people, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, I really understand that getting his acceptance was really,
it really helped. It really relieved a lot of us as well. Because I talked to other, you know, like from the Pinoy's group, you know, I mean, they all had the same, right? We all feel like maybe it shouldn't be us, but if not us, who? Especially also like when, you know, there was all these Duterte and still is, and, you know, like this whole killing stuff, then you're like, who is supposed to be talking about that? But yeah, so he has been a great shining light for us. And also then we had in 2000, if you can redact this, I don't remember when we were there, but I don't know. I think it was 2016, right?
The year after.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then we went to Manila, so we got a grant from what is sadly disappeared. It's called CICOU, is the Center for Cultural Utvikling, yeah. that closed down. So that was helping really Denmark to connect with other countries, you mm-hmm. know, in the world. So mm-hmm. it would help initiatives from Scandinavia to export artists, okay. right? Yeah. So what we did is that we had a troupe of performers from Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and someplace Finland. So where I think there were 12 performers that we all flew to Manila. And what we planned is that we actually kind of got the authorization to perform in an old theater that was closed down since for 30, 40 years. It was abandoned, basically. Okay. And it was under renovation, but it was not nearly open, you know, to the public. I think it just got opened last year. So by then, it was really decrepit. It was there was no electricity, no running water. It was just like, you know, it was the foundation was being rebuilt, kind of. But we got the authorization, you know, to do that because it was part of the re-establishment of that place. And we performed there like a more like an immersive kind of performance with a troupe. So you would go into the theater and then there were, you know, the dance performance around.
Around the audience or inside, between the audience.
Yeah, so the audience was guided in the theater. That was, we installed lights all ourselves. We cleaned up everything ourselves. We bought a lot of things. We hired also like a Danish engineer to come with us, you know, to install everything. Because, of course, we needed generators. We needed a bunch of things that probably wouldn't pass the health inspection here in Denmark. But, hey, in the Philippines, it's a bit more open. But it was very good. And we made it free. We performed for 2 nights in a row. And it was sold out both nights. It sold out, like the tickets were taken. But and people were just, we didn't want to make, an event only for the elite there that could only afford paying. Right. Mm. So we had it open for everyone. And it was a big success. We had a lot of good critique, but also just people who are not necessarily seeing arts, on their everyday life. Mm. So we really wanted to have those people in.
Then, so people had good reactions.
Yeah. Mm. And I think they were just very not used to this type of performances, like the immersive performances. A lot of performances, I think the